Mr. Doom. Let's talk. Alec has curated, and again, congratulations to him. I think it's very well deserved in terms of what he has created with Biz News Conference 6. So I think he will hear your compliments to him. He curated a number of speeches over the last 2 days that have been focused on the scenario that could unfold in South Africa. I've seen you sitting in the front. Is there nothing that has shifted your perception in any of those conversations?
Well, I think if we can manage to get the ANC out of power, no question, that's a game changer. But is it going to happen? And I hope and pray it can happen, and the DA and some coalition takes control of this country, that will save the country. But I don't see it happening, and I can't bank one of my clients' money on that happening. It's one of the uncertainties. When it happens, we will change our strategy.
What about the uncertainty that faces the rest of the world? Look at the US. And we did hear from Tsai, Trump comes in and markets are going to rally because he's going to make the right moves for businesses across the US. But there is also geopolitical uncertainty. We could see a world war. We're seeing the issues that prevail in many geopolitical hotspots. I need not elaborate on them here. But surely there's a level of uncertainty globally that could blow your offshore thesis right out of the ground.
There's, going back to 1987, 21st of October 1987, I was financial editor of The Star, and I had to go to a banquet that night, and my suit was lying there, and the markets opened at 3 o'clock, and there was a banquet with 400 Americans in South Africa, the YPO, the Young Presidents Organization. And at 3:30, they canceled the banquet. The stock market had dropped 22%, and all those Americans jumped on the plane and went home. So uncertainty, political events, geopolitical trends, earthquakes, are the permanent feature of stock markets. You're not going to get away from them. A lot of them are unpredictable, and sometimes they're bad for markets, sometimes they're good for markets. So to answer your question, it's always unpredictability. It doesn't matter. That's why the stock market gets those kind of returns, but it can give you the losses that comes with it. It's how you play it. And again, I'm looking at a Rorschach test. What do I see? Could there be a war in the Middle East? Of course it can. Could Russia drop a nuclear bomb? Of course they can. Could Trump win the election? Of course he can. There are just so many factors.
But isn't there more uncertainty than what you faced previously when you look at the...
I don't think so. I mean, I can't do detail, but if you take a chart of the S&P 500 going back 50 years, it's a history of events, up, down, crashes. But somehow, over time, stock markets and the smart money, the money goes, it's driven by people who make decisions about their money, and somehow it kind of follows a line, whether it's equities or bonds or gold or oil. But over 40 years, that's just how markets have behaved. And if you are looking for safety and predictability in stock markets, you're in the wrong town. You need to go to the bank and ask for an upside spot account, and that's it. You're going to not... That's the nature of markets. It's how, and I bit also refer to it, the emotional reaction to many of these events. And this is where most people get it wrong. They panic after a crash. And then they think stock markets are bad. They pull out the money. And they can never understand why they never get the returns everybody else is talking about, because they panic. The human nature is like that.
So you're talking to the structural demise of South Africa. Is there not merit in the strength of our institutions, the banks, for instance, as a beacon of stability and sensibility? And you heard both Tsai and Pete saying, the banks are a good place to be investing in South Africa.
Again, I thought that the damage that's been done to middle-class South Africans and even affluent South Africa the last 10 years has to at some point reflect in the banks, their balance sheets, and their bad risks. And it's now coming through. APSA yesterday announced that bad debt revisions are through the roof. I pick it up in RMB, I pick it up in FNB. It's coming through in the banks because the economy is so bad. I mean, if you look at middle-class wealth, upper-class wealth, It has almost been destroyed. The economy hasn't grown. Interest rates are at historical highs. Your assets have not grown. There was something on Business Tech last night. I know the owner of Business Tech is in the audience. He was saying that even affluent people are now going for debt counseling because they just can't cut.
And isn't that a point where it's very despairing to be sitting in this audience as a South African without the visibility? You talk about the demise of the currency and the fact that has trapped certain and probably large tracts of the population in South Africa. Does it, and I suppose it's a timing thing here, many people will be sitting here and saying it's too late for me to allocate offshore. How do I don't have, first of all, middle-class South African, I don't have that additional income. I'm sure there are many people sitting here thinking exactly that. Where do I start with offshore allocation at this juncture when the markets offshore have run?
When my children started working a couple of years ago, all of them, I sat next to them and I explained to them what I'm going to be doing with their pocket money or whatever I paid them. I created for them, all of them, debit orders into an offshore fund. And I sat down, for instance, with my youngest daughter, and I sat down and said, "My darling, this is your investment I'm creating for you." And she said, "What is an investment?" I explained to her, then still didn't get it. And I said, "Give me your cell phone." And she would give me the cell phone. I said, "It's an Apple cell phone, is it not?" And I showed her on the fun fact sheet, her money is going into Apple. And then she said, "Cool." She said, "Penny dropped." And I look at the kind of returns. And we're not talking big money. We're talking 500 Rand a month, 1,000 Rand a month. But 5-6 years later, growing at 20% per annum and compounding effect, there's a very nice nest egg building for everyone. So the size of the money doesn't make a difference. It's the choice of the asset class that is very important. And everybody, doesn't matter where you are, rich or poor, if you can put away 500, 1,000, that's your money. If it's growing at 20% over 10 years or 20 years, it's going to be much, much different than growing at 4 or 5%, and many South African funds have been growing. Now, you asked me about good news. If there's a change of government, always there's a dramatic change in the ANC's approach to managing this economy. I just don't see the signs. And you're going to be listening to Dr. Anthea Jeffries tonight, and she talks about her view of the world. You look at reports by Professor Ricardo Haussmann 2-3 months ago. He came out with a 200-page study on South Africa, and he listed what we're doing wrong. Ricardo Haussmann is an advisor to President Ramaphosa. Maposa. They just dumped it, very little media coverage. And I still don't see it. My job is to read, think, and then listen. And ask me now, I don't see any reason right now to invest in the JSE. Cheap as it might be, there might be a trigger. What is that trigger?
Is there not, and this is Pete's argument, not mine, we tested it on him earlier, is there not merit in saying that because the public sector is not working, the private sector solves, and there are private sector opportunities that are being built out of the challenges in South Africa? And that's where you need to look, whether it's in private sector schooling, whether it's in, private schooling, in education, whether it is in the logistics sector. These were the themes that Pete was talking about earlier. Is there not merit in that argument? Public sector can't do it, so private sector will solve.
Well, you know, you look at some of the statistics about fixed investment in South Africa the last 2 to 3 years, and some economists will say, yes, it's up dramatically. You strip it out, you find out that it's the amount of money people are spending on rooftop solars, not by choice, but they're forced to do it. Big factories, shopping centers, we are spending billions of rands on solar panels and equipment because it's going to collapse. That's not something that you would like to do, but you've been forced to do it. We see it now in Johannesburg. I mean, we've got areas in Randburg. I used to live in that area. It's a very affluent upmarket area. They haven't had water for 9 days. You know, that's what's happening. So unless, and I hate to come across negative, I'm not. I just look at a lot of facts. And Praveen Gordhan always said, connect the dots. I can't connect the dots. I don't see it. In my Rorschach test, I'm seeing a bat, not a butterfly.
Well put. Why so much reliance on the offshore managers to decide when, as a signal, because you spoke about it a couple of times in your presentation now, what are the foreign direct investors doing or the foreign asset managers doing? South Africa's not featuring on their radar. Why is that such an important barometer? Why are they so clever?
Well, I think they're smarter than me, and they and there's one of them sitting in the audience. They have a global perspective. They can choose from anywhere in the world. If they choose a company, like a cosmetic company, I think most ladies will know what I'm talking about. I think it's one of the best investments any man can make. It's a cosmetic company, L'Oreal. There's a tip for you, ladies and gentlemen. L'Oreal is my tip. They can choose from the best in the world, not restricted to South Africa. And also, a lot of those companies that you can invest in, and Sean Pesce will speak about it tomorrow, you know, they've got a global reach. They're not in one country. They are global. Kumano car manufacturers and all. Those are not American companies. They are global companies. What they do and how they dominate their sectors is far more important where they are situated. And again, you look at the South African economy over the last 10 to 15 years, it's just flatlined. If it was an ECG test, they would have switched off the machine and pushed him out. Unfortunately, again, I come back, plus saying, give me the best investment return at the lowest possible risk.
So,
and the risk in South Africa, sorry to interrupt, in my opinion, has been and is still very high, they are taking the money offshore, despite the currencies that can play a role. But we're talking about risk-adjusted returns. And right now, I cannot, might be cheap, opportunities or pockets of opportunities, but the ANC has created a very toxic environment for capitalism in South Africa. With their policies and ideologies, capital is disappearing. It's not my fault. I can comment on it and I can people. These are the facts. You can't choose your own facts.
I'm definitely not arguing with you. I'm just pushing your thesis. And I think perhaps just one counter to the, with all due respect to the global asset managers in the house, is that perhaps because we're so insignificant, they don't look at the market and they don't understand the market. Just one area of defense is that it's inconsequential in their lives, but there could still be huge value in the South African market.
Of course. We are still one of the biggest producers of commodities in the world. If we can get our mining rights sorted out, for example, there was a shocking statistic at the mining in Indaba that one of the gentlemen said there was not one single mining application approved in a year. We brag that we've got all the resources in the world, but we're not approving any mining exploration rights. So that's the problem that I'm talking about. So
I hear
if there is a massive commodity boom, and if you follow commodities, you follow South Africa, you can make a heck of a lot of money, as we saw from 2020 to 2022. But that boom has come and gone. The resources have been spent. And now we're back to where we were. So they could always, but there needs to be a trigger. I just don't see the trigger yet.
Let's move to our audience. So any questions that you have got burning? There's a question.
Magnus, I just want to ask you, what do you think the risk of experiencing hyperinflation in this country, such as what they've seen in Argentina? We've heard the political instability here. What do you think of that happening here?
As they say, the politicians say, that's a very good question. Come back to it later. But, you know, we saw now in the budget that they're going to raid the GEFCRA, whatever they call it, the Golden Foreign Exchange Reserve Fund that's been sitting there for 20 years. And they haven't been talking about this until 6 months ago when some hedge fund manager in London said, hey guys, there's a lot of money there. Why don't you look here? And here all the NGOs jumped on and said, yes, this is where the money is. Go and Google SARB Governor November 2023. A Reserve Bank governor is on here. I watched it. And they asked him that question in the audience. They asked him about the reserves, and he said it will be a reckless decision to do that. It's on record on a video. 2 months later, they announced we're taking, 150 billion out of the pot. And it is potentially very dangerous. Once you start raiding that pot, it's going to be raided again until it's empty. And then to me, depending on how this debt situation in South Africa plays out over the next couple of years, our debt is already 20% of all our interest payments of government debt. It can very easily escalate into a situation and you simply cannot get inflation down. You've got to keep your interest rates high and the economy just won't grow. So it's a very, very, it's a realistic assumption. Don't expect the traditional economists to talk about that and they all tell us all under control. I don't think it is. I think that was a very dangerous decision by the government, raid that pot, because it's not going to be the first time.
Magnus, as you rightly pointed out, the USA, what counts in their favor is that they have these global players with global reach and a big middle economy. But there are very few countries, if any other, that can print money as they do with not such a massive impact upon the inflation. But my question is, when will the government debt become a tipping point?
I think I was asked that question 40 years ago as a journalist, and I said, I don't know. Because they are the reserve currency of the world, it's a freak of nature that after the Second World War, the US dollar became the major currency of trade and of investment, overtaking the pound sterling. They, as the issuer of dollars, can print dollars, and the world wants it. If you look at some charts that I've seen, one of the reasons why the S&P and if NASDAQ has done so well, there was other charts that I saw from the International Bank of Settlements, which showed after 2008, the money from all around the world has poured into America and it still continues to pour in. The world still thinks, despite all you spoke about risk, the world still thinks America is the safest place on this planet. And that includes Chinese money. It includes European and Asian and Australian money. They all think U.S. is the safest place for your money. It's still the reserve currency of the world. And you cannot, until that changes, the dollar will keep on printing its way out of trouble. So I don't see that changing very soon.
And this, sorry, I know there's a question there, but the BRICS geopolitical structural shift that we're seeing, is that not something that you are scenario planning on?
You know, it's tiny. It's a tiny, tiny factor. If you add up the BRICS, the contribution to world economies, the biggest one is China and India. It should actually be China and India. Everybody else is just hanging on to this BRICS. It's a political posturing. It's South Africa is like a little chihuahua running after the big dogs. It doesn't mean in a big scheme of things behind closed doors that people have a laugh at it and say, what are these guys trying to do? It's not going to replace the dollar in our lifetime.
Jean, we'll go with that. Jean, yes, we're going to get mics to you now. There are mics, two mics in the room, there and there. So I think you got it first, so go ahead.
Magnus, thank you. Just to turn your world upside down, if there's a favorable election result and the rand strengthens, what are you going to advise your clients then?
Sorry, repeat that question.
I say, If South Africa has a favorable election result in your eyes,
I would tell them the following. If you have more money to invest, and you've already got some money offshore, don't take more out, you stop investing in South Africa. The most question, would I tell people to bring the money back? No, never, because that's not why it went out in the first place. Because you can, it's done for other reasons. You might say, fresh money, out of a house, out of a business, dividends, whatever. You can start upping your African portfolio. But would I tell people to bring money back? Absolutely not. It will never happen. I definitely hope, because I'm in investment business, I'd like to make money for my clients in South Africa. And we have in bonds and in cash. The equity market is a trigger. The election could be one. But can I bank your pension or your inheritance on something may or may not happen? Or that will be dangerous. That will be very risky. I will lose you as a client. I cannot gamble with your money. That's the difference between an advisor and a fund manager. I've never met a fund manager who's not bullish about his fund. I've never met a fund manager who's not first quartile in his sector. It's just a fact of life. Well, I understand that, but that's not where I come from.
Go ahead.
Hi, Magnus. Thanks for your honesty. Do you think that the tech sector is overvalued in the NASDAQ at the moment? And secondly, at this point in time, do you think it's too late to take money out into dollars? Should we wait till after the election?
You know, it depends who you read. It depends, and you can read as much as you can, and you'll be as confused as a chameleon on a box of Smarties. You've got to make a call. I follow certain people in the global market, and I kind of stick to what they say. And a lot of what I've been reading is the tech sector is not expensive. Doesn't mean it can't fall. I read a report this morning. Bank of America is extremely bullish on the tech sector and on the, what do they call them, the Magnificent Men or the Magnificent Seven or whatever they call themselves. They're very bullish. They're saying this is a career, or what do they call it, a decade of innovation coming our way. And now you read that. Then you turn the page and you read a report by Jeremy Grantham, who says everything is going to fall into a pile of dung in the next couple of months. Who do you act? Who do you believe? I mean, it's how you construct a portfolio for a client. It's how you balance risk and reward and what tolerance to risk the client has. And that is a psychological game. We had this. We actually give our clients a psychological test. We give them a test to check where their tolerance to risk is, and it's compiled by a psychologist. Kind of saying, I can handle volatile markets, and you do the test and comes back and says, no, you can't. And we have to be guided by something. So to answer your question, do I take money out now? Yes, you do. If you don't have money offshore, because you're never going to get the timing right, because you're making two calls. I always tell people, and I know we're going to wait for the rand to strengthen. I said, but you're making a call on the rand dollar exchange rate, and you're making a call on the overseas market. You're not going to get both right at the same time. Or if you do, it's luck.
Magnus, we've got another question here.
You will make money.
What's your feelings on India? And would Sanlam be a good way of investing in India, given their moves into that country?
I wouldn't invest in Sanlam as a way to get into India. There are much easier and cheaper ways to invest directly into India. I mean, strangely, Sanlam locally has an India fund under the radar. Nobody talks about it. So you can put money into that fund with local money. If you want to take money offshore and invest in an Indian fund, you can do so. There are a couple of them. Templeton has got one. The problem is, as an advisor in South Africa, we can only recommend a fund that is registered by the Financial Services Authority. So if I recommend a non-registered fund, I could lose my license. So we are restricted to only a couple of Indian funds and ETFs, which are on the various platforms. So, but to answer your question, if you think India is a place to be, and which I agree with, maybe 5, maybe 8%, I wouldn't buy Sunland to get to benefit. I would buy an Indian fund that is a dedicated Indian fund. But you've got to do that offshore on a platform where you can choose, or your advisor chooses. But that's another thing, that there are certain funds that we may not recommend to clients unless they ask us about the fund. Then we can recommend it. How do you like that, Trubly? So we're going to sign, say, ask me, ask me.
Lots of questions coming from Phil.
Magnus, where would you advise to invest offshore?
You know, I've been lucky in Japan for a long time. Believe it or not, in my competition with Pete, the five-year competition, which is the two-and-a-half-year stage, half of my fund is in Japan. The other 40% is in a fund called for Ranmore. And then I've got some 20% into tech. So I've been like Japan for a long time. My wife and I were in Japan 2017. We had lectures from the Japanese Reserve Bank. We went to lectures. I came back and I said, guys, we need to invest in Japan. And again, couldn't find a Japanese fund in South Africa. found one, Orbis Global Japan. Now, have a look. It's actually beaten the S&P 500 over the last 10 to 15 years. So Japan has been a phenomenal place to put your money. I mean, for a very specific sector. I mean, I think Ranmore has got a nice exposure to Japan. Is it right, Sean? You like Japan as well. But, you know, there we would leave the decisions to the fund manager. But I've liked Japan for a long time. And strangely enough, Europe has been doing very nicely. Under the radar, certain European companies have done extremely well. Now, I don't know if anybody knows about Novo Nordisk. Yes. It's a Danish company. Market capitalization is bigger than the whole Danish economy. What do they make? Weight loss drugs. Everybody's getting injections in the world, and these guys can't make enough of the stuff. And it doesn't matter what they charge it, it sells. So those are the kind of opportunities, if you're following markets and you do your research, that you could find.
So what about Aspen and Lilly? They can't make it.
You can't get it in South Africa.
They've just got the license. They've just signed with Lilly now to manufacture in their sterile manufacturing plants in Durban.
That's going to be a waste. There are no fat people in South Africa.
Well, I was chatting to someone who said, I want to come back my next life and run his pharmaceutical company specifically into that market.
That's me. I didn't know that. I need to go and look at that. Then, you know, you start looking at Aspen. So those are the kind of companies that if you go on a global scale that they are there. And, you know, a place that I've been reading up about a lot, I'm sure a lot of you all, is Argentina. This new president is changing everything. Maybe put some money in Argentina. I don't know what Sean thinks of it, but no. What does that mean, Sean?
But another question here. I know we're going to be chatting to Sean tomorrow, I think, aren't we? No, yes.
Magnus, hi. I'm interested to get your perspective on Bitcoin, possibly as an investment with the upcoming elections. Is it a safe place to put your money, particularly cash, when you don't really know what's going to happen? And on the assumption maybe the elections turn out horrible and the rand crashes, is it a safe way to store the value of your rand, or rather store the value of your cash, and then thereafter maybe liquidate a little bit? But just in terms of the upcoming elections as an alternative option to actually moving money into different countries.
Is this Bitcoin a new thing? I can't answer it. I don't know. I do not understand Bitcoin. I've tried. I've had lectures. I've read videos. I've read the original 22-page documents by Arashima Matamata, whatever his name. Don't understand it. How can I... You can invest in something if I don't understand it. I've made enough money for my client, for myself, in the FANG stocks, in the Magnificent Seven over the last couple of years. I've been making 25% to 30% for my clients. Why would I put money into a fund or an instrument that's not regulated? I could lose my license. So to answer your question, I'm not being rude. I don't know.
We'll be taking that discussion further with Stafford Marcy and Easy Equities tomorrow in terms of Bitcoin. No questions on this side? Yes, we've got some questions on this side and one in the front here. Thank you. Go ahead.
Magnus, I might have missed it in Pitt's presentation earlier. I wasn't here, but can you give us an update on your five-year competition and where it stands?
Gentleman who put in the money, I think he's in the audience. You will confirm that at the moment, neck on neck. Bearing in mind that, and Derek will know, we both launched the fund at November 21, worst possible time to go offshore. In 3 months, Pitt was up 20% and I was down 30%. It was like 50%. And everybody said, oh, pay, all over. And since then, it's just been the reverse. The point that Pitt makes, that's how markets work. So right now, I think we're both in the money. And I think there's about a 10,000 rand difference between the two. So far, so good. Yeah. If that competition was launched 6 months later, it would have been a total different game. It's a total different game. The offshore market would have been 50% higher. Timing in the market plays a very big role. Time in the market plays a role. And different asset classes behave differently at the same time. So it's a good learning curve. But right now, we're neck on neck again.
Thank you.
Magnus, I like you because you like gold. Now, I know you do a different type of thing offshore with your gold. Maybe it'd be enlightening just to understand that a bit better. And do you also recommend Kruger Rands for your South African investors?
Yes, strangely enough, I do. And a lot of our clients, we say we suggest you go and buy a Kruger Rands wherever you can buy them. It's not part of our offering because it's not on a platform. It's not in a fund. But gold, Kruger Rands have been a very, very steady investment. We use a gold fund, Castleston Gold Fund offshore on our platform. There's only one fund we can use. So we like gold, and it's done very nicely. So I'm assuming you like gold, don't you? You're smiling there. I can see it.
Can I do a quick poll? Because I'm just dying to find out how many of you think that there is going to be a positive outcome to South Africa's election. Yes, hands up now. Oof. I did say that was the positive outcome to South Africa's election.
Did you say outcome or positive outcome?
I said positive outcome. And that was...
I just want to make one final statement. And on social media, I've taken a heck of a lot of slack from colleagues and fund managers and people telling me to bugger off and patriotic. Let me say the following. All six of my kids live in South Africa. All my grandkids are in South Africa. I'm one of the few families where everybody's still in South Africa. I've just bought another property in the Cape. But that's not what it's about. It's about advice to my clients. Now, the last 15 years, I honestly just kept on seeing bats, not butterflies.
I think a lot of us see bats, not butterflies. Just in terms of your allocation and the decisions that you make in terms of your asset managers, the indices that you decide to invest your clients' money in, how do you, there's a lot out there. We see, yeah. There's just noise.
We get approached almost daily by fund managers to come and pitch, want to come and tell us this story. We turn it around, we'll contact you too. So we use the various tools, the Morningstar returns and the Assessor returns, and we do our own internal research on funds itself. And through a process of elimination, we look at many things. We look at size, we look at consistency of the fund manager, we look at all the clever terminology that they use. And we whittled our offering down to about 65 funds at the moment. High equity, medium equity, low equity, and then offshore. Now we will concentrate those fund managers. We will have one-on-one. We will have a Zoom meeting like we picked up Sean from Randmore via ADEC. We chatted a couple of times. We independently assessed the fund. And we got to the point where we say we like what he's doing. We can talk to him, that which is very important to us. And we basically ended up with a menu. It's like going into a restaurant and you have an Italian restaurant, you've got all the Italian dishes. It's a limited menu. Don't expect French cuisine or Greek food on the Italian menu. So we have a limited range of funds that we have tested using a whole range of criteria. That then goes out to our business and we say, guys, these are the funds that you should use because they've been checked and then we're happy with that.
Magnus, it just stands for me to say thank you very much. It is always a privilege to sit down with you. And I think the knowledge that has been shared on the stage today speaks volumes. You are the ultimate rockstar.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.